This is the Financial Exchange with Chuck Zotta and Mike Armstrong. Your exclusive look at business and financial news affecting your day, your city, your world. Stay informed and up to date about economic and market trends. Plus, get breaking business news every day. The Financial Exchange proudly supports the Disabled American Veterans Department of Massachusetts. Registration is now open for this year's DAV 5K on Saturday, November 6th. Go to financialexchangeshow.com/DAV for details. And now, it's time for The Financial Exchange with Chuck Zotta and Mike Armstrong.
Chuck Zotta, Paul Lane with you today, filling in for Mike Armstrong. We've got Tucker with you as well. And as we take a look around markets, I woke up this morning and I said, uh-oh, looks like we might have some losses to start the week because futures were down. But we got a nice, moderately sized rally going on. It's the Dow's up 142 points, the S&P's up 20, the NASDAQ is up 77. So about a 0.5% rally taking place. Bond market closed today. Isn't this one of these weird... Why is the bond market closed but the stock market's open?
Today's overall weird.
Was Christopher Columbus a big bond guy or something like that? What's the deal here?
Maybe they're more tightly tied to the banking system. And because our banks...
Banks are closed.
Right. Maybe they go hand in hand. The stock market's its own thing. Well, maybe, I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm just trying to theorize why that could be the reason.
I don't think bank stocks should be trading then either. Financials shouldn't be trading.
Doesn't seem fair.
Well, that would be very difficult for the ETFs and those baskets in place.
Well, this is hard for me. Okay, this is. I'm trying to figure out why the bond market's closed and why the equity markets are open.
Let them have a breather. Let them have a break.
We've got oil up about 2% off its highs today. It was up about 3.5% when I first looked at it this morning. But West Texas Intermediate now at $80.92 a barrel. Brent crude at $83.88, also up about 2%. Gold today continuing to just lollygag. It's just not going anywhere. We've got gold at $17.56 per ounce, and crypto is crypto. Evergrande, haven't talked about them in a couple weeks. Article in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend about the Chinese property market as a whole, and I think all this continues to come back to the fact that if China is serious about deleveraging its property market, which you have to believe they are, given the lengths they've gone to this point, then it is going to be a significant drag on global growth for the next several years because the Chinese property market has been propped up and been a significant contributor to global growth for the last decade based on China throwing an obscene amount of money at it. And if that money is now no longer going towards Chinese real estate, hey, you got an awful lot of industries that depend on the Chinese real estate sector as as a major buyer for their goods and services. That's going away, and so you have to reset how global growth is going to be constructed.
Yeah, a lot of the double-digit GDP growth that we have seen from China in the past decade was largely based on this expansion in the real estate sector that the country had experienced. But now, as we've mentioned before, they are going through this shift where they're trying to steer away from real estate and more towards manufacturing of technology components, different parts and chips. And as a result of that, the deleveraging and some of the policies that are being put through has really put a huge drag on a market that has just been borrowing for year after year after year. And at some point, the bill comes due. And with some of these policy initiatives, it certainly impacted Evergrande, and that's the one that's grabbing the headline news. But Chuck, this is more wider spread than just one property management company out there. This impacts, 100 of the top issuers or developers in China.
It does, and so you have a huge property market out there. And I think the one thing that does seem to be fairly certain to me is that China is not simply going to say, hey, guess what? We're just going to let everything, the chips fall where they may, and we're not going to, assist our economy in digging out of this. They clearly are going to support the economy in different ways in China, but not necessarily bailing out all of the stakeholders and constituents in that real estate market. It's going to be, it's the biggest question in my mind is how does the Chinese government try to engineer, I guess what you would call a soft landing without explicitly bailing out these companies because it's clear they don't want them to continue to do what they've been doing.
That's the biggest piece. And Emma, David, and I did a podcast on this whole situation. It's what is the Chinese government's reaction going to be to these companies, these developers out there. Are they going to be accommodating, or are they going to take a harder line stance? Their bankruptcy process is a lot more efficient than what is the United States. They have a lot more control over it. So they do have the capability to resolve the issue and kind of gear towards that soft landing. But there could be turbulence along the way, depending on how they come out with their policies and what actions they take.
Let's turn more to some domestic issues here. And a great piece in the New York Times over the weekend. There is shadow inflation taking place all around us. And this is something that I don't think is fully captured by economic statistics. And I'm not talking about, oh, the Fed's cooking the books on inflation. I'm not talking about that. What I'm talking about is, hey, you go out to a restaurant. And let's say that that restaurant used to have tableside service. And now they've gone to order at the counter and pick your food up at the counter. You might not be seeing necessarily a higher price at that restaurant, but you are seeing a reduction in service. And so the CPI or, you know, the PCE or any, you know, private measures of inflation don't pick that up. They don't say, gee, restaurant X is charging more, but you are getting less in terms of the service. And this is something that I think is really interesting here.
This was a fantastic piece because it's not something you think about, and it's trying to basically quantify these anecdotal stories that we exchange with each other when we're just, you know, hanging out or talking on the weekend, where you explain that whether it's a hotel experience that you may have where they don't have that same housekeeping staff, or they don't want to charge you higher rates because they want you to stay at what's been an awful time for the industry. So they don't want to pass through those higher costs that we mentioned to the consumer, because that's going to drive away the demand. But as a result, they'll take shortcuts along the way and they'll cut out, I don't know, the turndown service or one of the cleanings that are scheduled for your room. And those types of things, you may come back and say, it's not going to change the price or anything like that, but you may come back and say to whomever you're speaking with, geez, that stay wasn't as great as I was used to. There were all these service issues, and we're seeing it in the restaurant industry as well. These understaffed areas, maybe not wanting to pass through to the consumer, but taking shortcuts to kind of keep things afloat.
And there even are the places where, again, not even talking about services, but in goods, you're getting less but paying the same, and you just don't realize it. Hey, there used to be 48 cookies in my package of Oreos. Now there's 42. Do I notice the difference? Not really. It looks about the same size, but I'm paying the same for a smaller package.
Auto manufacturers, too. There's a lot of those chips that we've talked about a lot on the show. They might be a censoring from you moving to one lane to another, kind of picking up that movement. They're now making the cars without that, or they're stripping out that functionality, so you have a more stripped down version of the vehicle, but because you have so much demand for it, they're able to charge that similar full retail price for less features just to get the car off the lot.
Tucker, you ever get yourself that food scale so you can weigh your bags of potato chips like I told you to?
No, I was actually thinking about potato chips when you were talking about that, because we bought the mini bags of like Cape Cod potato chips.
Ah, yes.
Open those.
There's got to be ten chips in those.
I'm not even exaggerating. Like, I think it was 9 to 10 chips. Yeah. And it's like the tiny bag, not the family size bag. It's just the individual bag. It's just like, what?
Imagine opening the family size bag and you only got 10 chips.
Yeah. It's not just Cape Cod and not just ragging on them. It's just across the board. That's what you're seeing.
Just
a bunch of air.
You know what still does it for me in terms of kind of like the family size or whatever? Either of you ever get the giant size Captain Crunch box?
No.
Or not Captain Crunch, Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
I love Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
I haven't had that in years.
The giant size box.
I'm never able to finish that box with it, you know, staying fresh.
So I can, but I'm kind of obscene when it comes to cereal.
Mm-hmm. Are you every morning a couple bowls, or are you someone who likes it as a nighttime snack?
Mornings. Mornings. But I don't have it all the time. I probably haven't had it in a month. Mm-hmm. It's been a little while. But when I do, I can go through a normal size cereal box in 2 to 2.5 days.
Wow.
The family size one usually gets me through a week.
Those are some big bowls.
So my wife gives me a lot of crap because she says, you know, you're eating too much. And
do you use that thing from Forgetting Sarah Marshall, that Tupperware that keeps your cereal fresh, or you just...
Doesn't stay in the house long enough.
Right, that's true.
I threw it so quickly. I don't need to have the freshest cereal. It's already fresh.
Duh.
It's already fresh. let's take a quick break here, and then we're going
to... Tucker put this in just to get us riled up. I know he did.
I know.
Just it, picture him like sort of like Dr. Evil sitting there in the morning like, this is going to get him.
Who's the comedian that did the sketch on... what's the guy who does... this is just a horrible story now.
Need some better hint.
The guy who has the talk show during the day, who... Jerry Springer. You know...
Yeah,
who's the comedian who did the sketch on Jerry Springer where he goes, you know, Jerry Springer wakes up in the morning, puts on his tie, and goes, "I'm going to start some crap today." That's Tucker when he sees a story like this. He just he looks at this and just goes, "Yup, this is the one."
Insert into stack.
So we've got that coming up when we return, as well as trivia.
This is your home for the latest business and financial news in New England and around the country. This is the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
As a business owner, we know the challenges of managing a budget during volatile economic times. So do the folks at Stony Brook Water. They've priced their water cooler so perfectly that signing up with them was a no-brainer because we knew it'd help save us money. Their lease deals are incredible, and the one we went with saved us 20% on our overall cost this year so far. Stop wasting money on cases of bottled water or those massive 5-gallon jugs that are so heavy to move. Provide your employees with a superior product and save significantly in the process. Like all of you who listen to the show, we are excited that the economy continues to get stronger, but so far, that hasn't made it easier to manage your budgets. Call Stony Brook Water today at 978-381-1476 and order your new Ion Cooler right now. They're sleek, lightweight, and will fit on any countertop. And most importantly, they'll deliver the purest, freshest water in every glass. That number again is 978-381-1476, or you can visit them online at stonybrookwater.com. Stony Brook Water. Water the way it should be.
Join our text club by texting the word Barry to 63566. Send your first and last name and get involved today. You're listening to the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
Time for trivia here on the Financial Exchange. Trivia is brought to you by Southern Airways Express. Enjoy fall on Nantucket with Southern Airways Express. You can book your flight today for a day trip or long weekend with easy travel from Norwood, Providence, or New Bedford. Forget the ferry or Logan's hassles and high fares. The easiest way to Nantucket, it's on Southern Airways Express. Great service, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com. Let's see what Matt has drawn up for trivia today. I know I've got it hiding in here somewhere. Where is it? Hold on. I moved it around a little bit. Okay, I've got it. A little NBA trivia. What former NBA star celebrates a birthday this week and is the only Celtics player in franchise history to lead the NBA in total points scored in a season? Good question. What former NBA star celebrates a birthday this week and is the only Celtics player in franchise history to lead the NBA in total points scored in a season? Text us at 63566. We'll take the fifth person with the right answer. It's going to take home a $50 gas card and be automatically registered to win a pair of round-trip tickets to Nantucket on Southern Airways Express. So... we've got this article from the Wall Street Journal with the headline, is the income tax rate on the rich 8% or 23%? And this comes on the heels of the fact that a Biden administration analysis said that the average tax rate for the 400 wealthiest households was at 8.2% from 2010 to 2018. However, this uses a metric that quite honestly doesn't exist, which is they take the amount that your assets have appreciated by and they assume that you should have paid capital gains on those assets even if you didn't sell them. So what this means is that if you are someone who happened to live in South Boston over the last 20 years, okay, Southie as it's affectionately known, and let's say that your property in 2000 was worth about $100,000. Okay. And today it's worth $1.5 million. If you are still living there, is there any rational way, Paul, that we should say that that person who's living in Southie should have to pay 15 or 20% capital gains tax on the property that they're still living in?
Just absolutely absurd.
Because the answer is no.
Absolutely absurd. Just an absolutely absurd calculation. It would be like saying anyone of who owns a home over the last year has probably seen by the national average 15 to 16% increase in your home value. Okay, tax due. When nothing changed in your situation at all, you're still paying the mortgage and you're still living there.
Here's, Paul, do you know how large the American real estate market is for residential?
In terms of the market value of all homes across the United States? I'm not even going to spitball a guess.
It's about $36 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the residential real estate market as a whole for the first year of the pandemic, basically March through March, okay, gained about $2.5 trillion in value. Meaning that if we wanted to actually tax just pure capital appreciation as it occurs, Americans would have had to pay $500 billion in taxes at a time when many of them were out of work and might not have even had money to pay said tax.
Sure.
Now, the reason why this is just so ridiculous is, again, the White House calculated that the tax rate on these wealthiest families came in at about 8.2%. Three completely different institutions, the Treasury Department, Congressional Budget Office, and Joint Committee on Taxation, all of which, okay, actually know what they're doing, said, no, the actual rate's somewhere between 23 and 25%.
Right.
Because we're not going to use this made-up metric. And by the way, this made-up metric was first used by Axios earlier this year in a piece that we absolutely shredded because it just doesn't make sense to do this. You don't simply pay tax because the value of something went up. Otherwise, to anyone who owns a car this year, should you have to pay more in taxes because the value of your car went up because used car prices went up?
It's just absurd. It's such a screw job. It's an absolutely horrific report, and it's even worse that they're publicizing it, because I get it. They're trying to point out the billionaires of the world, the Bezoses, the Buffets, and make an example out of them, but they're doing it with absolutely atrocious math and just tax concepts that make no sense whatsoever.
And here's the worst part of it. There is a case to be made that there is significant inequality and that the wealthy are able to use tax shelters to not pay what they should pay in taxes. Mm-hmm. There are all of those cases that can be made. But when you undermine it with crap like this, oh dear. Oh dear. You take all the good work that people are trying to do and saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't allow for tax havens in the Cayman Islands, and maybe we shouldn't allow for, you know, companies to move profits offshore to Ireland. You take all the good work that's being done to try to address those things, and you make a mockery of it with this crap.
Just despicable. Just despicable.
It's not good. It's not good. Very bad. Thank you for putting that in there today, Tucker. I was off to such a happy start to the week, and now it's good to feel like it's a Monday again.
Hey, you're very welcome. That's why I'm here, you know?
I know. To bring me
put
down.
Put things in perspective.
To bring me down when I get too high. Speaking of too high, soaring home prices are roiling appraisals and upending sales. We've got a property market that moved so quickly for much of 2020 that, or 2021, that home appraisers often couldn't keep up with where prices were, and so you had people coming back to prospective buyers saying, actually, we need you to put more down because your appraisal came in short.
Or renegotiate the listing price for that, what they had been agreed upon.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that one of the notes in here was that people were waiving appraisals, which I've heard it all now, because there was the waiving the home inspections. That's still quite prevalent, but I didn't even know that was an option that you could do, just waive the appraisals. The thing that's supposed to be helping you and providing a buffer on what is a real estate market that has run extremely high, we can all agree, people are just throwing that out the window.
In May of this year, 19.7% of home appraisals came in short of the price needed for underwriting.
Mm-hmm.
That compares to 7.3% in January of 2020 before the pandemic started. So
almost a tripling.
Almost a tripling of the percentage of homes that couldn't hit their appraisals for underwriting. And it's come back down since then, just because, again, it feels like to me May through July of this year was just peak nuttiness.
Mm-hmm.
That percentage is now down to about 13%. But it still is something where the entire appraisal and underwriting system, I'll be honest, is something that I just don't completely understand.
I know some of the basic metrics of price per square foot and things like that, but the complaints that they have is that those are two to three. in what was a very rapidly moving real estate market, the appraisals were reflecting data from 2 to 3 months prior when they're arguing that that wasn't really what the market was. But typically with real estate, it's not been an issue. It doesn't move as quickly as the stock markets do, so you don't need to concern yourself with that. But it's a situation where recently it needed to be updated even quicker, it seems like.
Yeah, it's just something where it's always seemed to me, especially, and maybe this is just my color from the financial crisis and lead up to it, if the appraisals actually were accurate, the financial crisis wouldn't have happened. But true. Instead, it seemed like just this incestual relationship between the appraisals and banks where, hey, we're making money, you're making money.
Everybody is in on the take, so there's no reason to stop.
This seems madness. Different, at least. It's like, oh, there's a problem here. But the problem is that the appraisals actually aren't keeping up now. So it's the opposite problem, I guess.
Exactly. And there are rules in place that should stop some of this craziness on the appraisals.
Let's take a quick break. We've got our trivia answer when we return.
The Financial Exchange is live on Facebook. So make sure to like our page and watch the guys break down the latest on the markets every day beginning at 10 on the Financial Exchange Radio Network. Financial news, business news, entertainment. If you don't think they all go together, you need to listen to our brand new podcast called Dumb Questions for Smart Money, presented by the Financial Exchange Radio Network. Subscribe today on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps.
Last segment, we asked a trivia question. That question... well, I lost the question, but the answer was Paul Pierce.
Oh, my God. It was for the most points scored in a season.
Yeah.
That was the
Celtic.
The question, and the winner today was Wayne from Hyannis. He has won a $50 gas card and is registered to win the pair of round-trip tickets to Nantucket on Southern Airways Express, which we will give away on this Friday's show. Trivia is brought to you by Southern Airways Express. Enjoy fall on Nantucket with Southern Airways Express. Book your flight for a day trip or long weekend with easy travel from Norwood, Providence, or New Bedford. Forget the ferry or Logan's hassles and high fares. The easiest way to get to Nantucket is on Southern Airways Express. Great service, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com.
Paul, you and I are both millennials.
We are.
As am I.
We're right on.
Oh, Tucker, you are too.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The three of us. When combined, we are one member of the greatest generation.
And that click you just heard was the collective
radios
turning off.
What do you mean? I said the three of us add up to one 90-year-old.
Oh.
Right. Oh, okay, because World War II generation.
Yeah. What?
You're using math. Okay.
The World War II generation is known as the greatest generation.
I agree with that.
I'm not pumping myself up, Tucker.
Okay, it sounded like you were.
I'm saying we are one-third of a 90-year-old, each of us.
Copy that.
Okay. In any case, we never miss an opportunity to rip on millennials because, again, just self-pain is just, you know, it's a beautiful part of life. And Paul just has an article that makes him want to just tear into millennials.
I'm like one of those toys that you wind up and just let me go, because Tucker's got two items on the stack to just have our gears really grinded up on this Monday. One of them was the income tax one, but this is the other one here, which I just think is the stupidest idea ever. This idea in the Wall Street Journal, if you're doing this and you're a millennial out there, you're an idiot. Teaming up to buy a house together with a friend is the worst idea, one of the worst ideas in the world. There's this trend now where, in this Wall Street Journal piece, that people in their 20s and 30s are teaming up to buy a home together.
And you're not talking about people who are married,
right?
Or
to be clear, it's friends. When you and your
BFFs,
your best bud, you and him or her,
the besties,
teaming up to buy a home. And I just can't overstate the amount of concerns that come up when you buy a property together. Now, in this article, they mentioned that there's all these caveats and a contract can be drawn up, but ultimately you and a friend are on different trajectories, and what you need or will want from your life or how your life will change when you're not on the same path of being a couple and a partnership where you're trying to move in tandem, it just makes for the worst idea ever. If your friend has to relocate because of a job or a family concern or anything that comes up, or he or she meets someone.
Yeah, life happens.
Life happens, and that the contract will need to be broken. Now, given, granted, there are some holding periods in some of these contracts, but real estate with friends or family becomes some of the most difficult, thorny issues to yes. navigate. And buying a home together, again, I just can't overstate. It's just an awful idea because there's so many controversies that can emerge from it.
And unless you're one of those people that says you're, you know, marrying my best friend today, which, by the way, anyone who says that, I can't stand that more than that. First of all, you shouldn't marry your best friend. You should have an actual best friend other than the person you're marrying, okay? Your husband or wife cannot fill all of these roles in your life. They are to be your spouse, your partner for going through life. They're not supposed to be your best friend. You should have an actual best friend who's on different terms from you than your spouse is. So when people say, oh, I'm marrying my best friend, it bothers me to no end.
Hashtag blessed.
Hashtag live, laugh, love. It's just like, come on, let's go, let's get over it. But in any case, if you are buying a piece of property with someone who you are not basically married to, for a primary residence, you should, if you're doing
very important caveat, yes. I'd like to make on my statements is that primary residence, where you live, where you yes. sleep, where you eat, not for an investment purposes, that's a different story.
Because I can tell you, I've had even someone like me, as distasteful as I am to hang out with. Okay, I wouldn't want to hang out with me, but I'm stuck in my own body. I've had a few friends in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to like four of them at this point. Once you have kids and do other
it cuts down the list.
You just don't have that much time to talk to other human beings anymore. So the idea that at age 27, you're going to know the one friend that you somehow still talk to when you're 35. No, you just it's horrible. And even I've seen couples before they get married who have gone out and bought properties as well. And I've seen two of them where they never ended up getting married. And now they're trying to figure out who's on the hook for this mortgage, who owns the house, who gets it. It's just a complete mess.
From a liquidity standpoint, it's awful because you can have those situations arise where one person wants to get out and the other doesn't, to trying to determine the fair market value of the property, the liquidity that goes along with. Typically, a 30-year-old is not going to have the money to just buy out the other person. So you're forced to sell at a time that may not be opportune. Now, granted, over the last year or two, these idiots who are probably approaching this say, oh, the market just keeps going up. We got to take advantage of it. That's not always going to be the case.
No. So my two pieces of advice. Number one, don't marry your best friend. Number two, don't buy a piece of property with someone who's your best friend who you aren't marrying. So in other words, don't buy property with your best
friend.
I'm
on number two. I'm still a little confused yeah. on number one on your statement there. But I get the general sentiment. That
are you guys telling me that your wives are your best friends?
No.
What's your definition of best friend? Because I feel
what
like
you best friend.
A best friend is someone
I need
who,
to define it. It's like pornography. I know it when I see it.
I'm not even going to touch that one. It's someone that you trust and spend
from
a ton of time
Court.
With. You spend a ton of time with and are very close with. That all those things are your partner and your spouse. They overlap.
No.
Well, that's why I'm asking what your definition is.
A best friend is the person where you say you want to do, you say anything and they're like, yeah, no matter what they're in. Your spouse is not that.
I just got what you're saying, and I get it. I'm on board.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Your
just
spouse,
with that,
is, your well, spouse that is the
quick.
Person.
With, no, that one sentence alone just encapsulates the whole piece of doing anything that you want at any point in time, and that's going to be someone who has the identical interests that you have. My wife does not fall into that category.
No,
love
exactly.
her to death, but she doesn't want to watch football for 8 hours on a Sunday. She'd much prefer spend her time watching other things. So
right.
I get what you're saying with that.
My wife keeps me from my worst tendencies.
Right.
My best friend encourages my worst tendencies.
That's very true. And going out to bars, all that stuff, they encourage you where your wife keeps us on the straight and narrow. I get it.
Folks, as a business owner, we know the challenges of maintaining a budget during volatile economic times. So do the folks at Stony Brook Water. They've priced their water coolers so perfectly that signing up with them was a no-brainer because we knew it would help us save money. Their lease deals are incredible, and the one we went with actually saved us 20% on our overall cost this year so far. You can stop wasting money on cases of bottled water or those huge 5-gallon jugs that are so heavy to move. Provide your employees with a superior product and save significantly in the process. Like all of you who listen to the show, we're excited that the economy continues to get stronger, but so far, that hasn't made it easier to manage your budgets. So call Stony Brook Water today. The number, 978-381-1476, and order your new Ion cooler right now. They're sleek, lightweight, and it'll fit on any countertop. And most importantly, they'll deliver the purest, freshest drinking water in every glass. That number again is 978-381-1476, or you can visit them online at stonybrookwater.com. Stony Brook Water, water the way it should be. Restaurant wages continuing to tick higher, but we're still continuing to see all kinds of issues with labor crunch at restaurants. Just as an example, over the weekend, I was trying to do a takeout order, and I had to borderline beg the person on the other end of the line to take my takeout order because they said that their kitchen was just so backed up because of all the activity they were seeing.
I told you guys, both you and Tucker, during a break that I was up in Vermont this weekend with some other couples, and we were running into the same...
Your best friends.
My real best friends, not my wife. We were running into a similar situation where we went to get takeout, my friend and I, at 4:30, and stood in a line for about a half hour before we were able to place our order, then waited another half hour to receive said order. And then in that meantime, we're talking 5:30, which is not exactly, that's early bird hours. That's not exactly the heat of the dinner hour. They were no longer doing takeout. They were just done at that point in time at 5:30. Their reservations were booked up. And this, we're seeing this everywhere. Chipotle is a local one nearby our office here. Last Thursday or Friday, I tried to place an online order. Just, they're not doing it. They don't have the staffing for it. And this is everywhere across the board, as we can tell these stories for days.
Great statistic that I have here. In February of 2020, Paul, here's, for both of you, here's a trivia question. There will be no prizes awarded.
This is going to be some random obscure thing, Tucker, that we have no chance at. But anyway.
You have no chance. Well, no, you have a chance. You're both smart guys. In February of 2020, before the pandemic started, What was the average hourly wage of a non-supervisory employee in the leisure and hospitality sector?
Leisure and hospitality, not restaurant, where it would be weighed down with the very low waiter's wage.
Correct. So this includes, you know, the hotel industry and obvious in other places.
I would go, this is a much more reasonable question for us to ask, for us to give an educated guess. I'd go $10 or $11.
Tucker?
I'll go $12.
$14.91.
Okay.
Wow.
That's the average, again, because, again, if it was 10, that'd be like near minimum wage for the whole industry. So,
gotcha.
Again, $14.91. Today, it's $16.71. That's a $2 increase. That's closing in on 15% over the last 2 years. And most of that, by the way, is since December. So in December of 2020, that was actually down to $14.66. So all of this increase has happened in the last 8 months, a 15% bump in wages for non-supervisory employees in leisure and hospitality.
From your standpoint, what do you feel are the biggest contributing factors to what clearly is an understaffed area of the job sector? Where, and Tucker and I were talking about this before, is it that there are better opportunities out there? Is it the pandemic? What are the factors that you feel have the heaviest weighting on the fact that we're just seeing this everywhere, this understaff?
I think specifically in this industry?
Restaurant and just restaurant, not leisure and hospitality.
I think a ton of people just found other work over the last year because of how uncertain it was.
I agree.
And I think that of the ones that remain, they obviously know they're in a good bargaining position, and so they're driving for higher wages right now. It wouldn't surprise me one bit that a lot of the people that are delivering orders from restaurants now probably used to work in restaurants. You know, I think a lot of people working for Instacart and those types of companies.
More flexible schedule, yeah. And less of the grind of just, you know, cleaning and going back and forth from table to table.
So I think that's a big, big chunk of it in my book.
I think the other part, in addition to that, just real quick, and opportunities. I think a lot of people in the restaurant industry had a major span of self-reflection during shutdown.
Right. Yeah.
And then when they reopened, you know, customers weren't the nicest. Let's put it that way.
No, yeah. It really is amazing just how quickly decorum went out the window when it comes to restaurant workers right now. I see people still just treating them terribly.
Yeah, I just feel like people are like, you know what, enough of this. And, you know, my wage isn't going up much, so I'm going to get the hell out of this industry.
Yeah.
I think you saw a lot of that.
It's if I always tell everyone, I think everyone in the world should have two jobs in their lives. I think that they should have to do some kind of, you know, heavy manual labor, and I think they should have to work in the service industry, and I think that they would be just much, and it'd have a much different outlook if they had to spend a year in each one of those jobs.
That's a great point. I worked at a call center, and once you do one of those jobs similar to what you were mentioning, you get it a little bit more.
You do. You're just a little bit nicer to people. I don't know. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, a little bit of Stack Roulette.
Business and financial news affecting the markets and your wallet. We got it all straight from Wall Street, right here on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
For over a century, VA New England Healthcare has been caring for veterans, and today is no different. The VA provides state-of-the-art healthcare to America's heroes. In today's ever-changing world, staying up to date with current information is critical, and VA New England Healthcare is here to help. Search hashtag VA New England on YouTube for more information, or call 844-VA-CARES. Connect with the benefits you earned and deserve. Call 844-VA-CARES.
If you're nearing retirement age, it's incredibly important to know how required minimum distributions work. The penalties associated with withdrawing the wrong amount are hefty. Call the Armstrong Advisory Group and ask for their new free guide, Understanding RMDs. Call 800-393-4001 and get your copy today. That's 800-393-4001. Or download it right now at armstrongadvisory.com. Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated. Member FINRA SIPC. And advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors Incorporated. Michael Armstrong, representative. Armstrong Advisory Group and the Securities America companies are unaffiliated. Representatives of Security America do not offer tax or legal advice.
We're finally back together. And now, it's time to finish in the fort. The DAV 5K is Saturday, November 6th, and there are still bibs available. To register for this year's DAV 5K and support the Disabled American Veterans of Massachusetts, visit DAV5K.Boston. That's DAV5K.Boston. The DAV 5K is proudly presented by Encore Boston Harbor.
This segment of the Financial Exchange is brought to you in part by Southern Airways Express. Enjoy a day trip or long weekend on Nantucket with Southern Airways Express. Southern's fast flights from Norwood, Providence, or New Bedford make for the perfect New England fall getaway. Southern Airways Express, great service, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com.
Paul, what would you like to start off with for Stack Roulette?
Are you a bond guy?
When my daughter was born last year, one of the things I did to pass the time was I watched all of the James Bond movies at one point. Not at once, but I'd say in general, yes.
Okay, you are a fan. Are you over 35 or under?
At.
Okay, because one of the issues that the recent James Bond film, which was pushed back, it seems like for a decade, but really was only a year and change, very tightly tied to the COVID-19 pandemic, was the initial numbers on the box office blockbuster came in at $56 million, which comparing to the other films, Skyfall and Spectre, which were
Spectre.
That shows you how much of a Bond guy I am. Clearly not very much of a Bond guy. $70 million, $88 million. And the reason they're stating for these lower numbers is because that 57% of their audience is over the age of 35, and those people are not running to the box office as quickly as those in the 18 to 34 demographic.
I have an alternative theory.
Okay.
The Bond movies used to be fun. They used to be, again, there's a reason why Austin Powers was made. It basically made fun of a lot of the early Bond movies. And I'll admit, I even liked the first couple Daniel Craig Bond movies because I thought they were very well done, very high quality, and I thought they were good. But I think at a certain point, you don't have to have... It feels like almost every movie that's made now has a level of darkness in it that wasn't present even 10 or 15 years ago.
The Batman ones are a perfect example of that. Just how dark they got.
Yeah, it's can't you just have something that's a little bit campy and goofy and kind of fun? Can't we just have fun movies occasionally instead of something that has to tell us about our humanity or about how, you know, evil exists? Sometimes you just want a movie that's
a popcorn flick.
Yeah.
Well, because that's what they are. They're distraction from reality. There's a plenty enough of serious stuff out there that can make you concerned. Sometimes you just want a couple hours to break away from it all.
So I think that that's part of my theory also, is that I think Bond has maybe gotten a little bit too dark, and I'd like to see them return to their roots and be a little bit less realistic and a little more campy, and I think that'd be kind of fun.
They, who's, who's set to be the new Bond? It's that guy.
I don't think they've announced
it
yet.
They haven't announced it.
I think it's still up for debate. I know there's a lot of rumors that Idris Elba will be.
Right.
But they have not officially announced anything yet.
Gotcha.
Disney World revealing how much their new line skipping tool is going to cost. So instead of getting the Fast Pass stuff, where was there a cost to that? I don't believe so.
No, I don't believe
you just had to pre-schedule and get an app and stuff, right?
Right, right. That's been around for a really long time.
So their new system for skipping lines is going to add approximately $40 to the price of the daily park entry, which costs anywhere between $109 and $159 for adults, meaning if you want to skip the lines, you're paying $150 to $200 now to do so each day, and this continues to make Disney less and less affordable for the average family.
So basically, it's a VIP system for the wealthy who can afford to pay more.
I don't think
tickets.
You can even call it VIP if it's offered to everyone. I think VIP gets thrown VIP around pricing. An awful lot. Yeah, VIP pricing, everyone's service.
Got it.
Let's see. Markets remain positive, but up about 0.5% today. We're done for the day. Hope you all have a great rest of the day, and we'll see you tomorrow on the Financial Exchange.